Welcome back to the Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight, part two of our two-night conversation on policing and proposed reforms. Last night, we got the perspective from officers. Tonight, we hear from those who represent the community in our region. Are new laws needed? And if they are enacted, will they make a difference? That's just part of our conversation tonight. We will go even deeper. We'd like to hear from you. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight, Will Jawando, council member with the Montgomery County Council, and Phil Mendelson, chairman of the D.C. Council. We thank you both for joining us. Again, phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Council Chair Mendelson, let's start with you. Emergency legislation that was passed this week by the D.C. Council and focusing sort of on police reform. Talk a little bit about that, and one of the issues I think that many folks are focusing in on are the body cameras. But let's start just with the need for the emergency legislation from your point of view.
From my point of view, and good evening, and thank you for having me.
Thank you.
From my point of view, we needed to act quickly, and yes, I've been challenged about this, but there's a lot of public upset, and it's legitimate. And what's happened in the last couple of weeks is the Band-Aid or bandage has been ripped off of the horrible wound of racism in this country. And the public upset, as I said, is legitimate, and it's important that government respond. And that's what we're trying to do. So there was some question about, shouldn't we take a more deliberative process? But there are things that we know now that we can do. For instance, we codified general orders with regard to neck restraints, but we also went further within what the general orders are right now in terms of what's required for training. We also changed the law with regard to officer discipline. We also expanded the authority of the Office of Police Complaints, or strengthened the Office of Police Complaints. I don't think much of this is controversial, and I think it's important that we act quickly and that we show that it's a new day, that we just have to be approaching these issues of police conduct differently.
Council Chair, there was some concern, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I guess from the mayor, in that she felt that the council moved quickly in the sense that there was not enough community input. Can you sort of address that, and is that possible when you have emergency legislation?
Well, emergency legislation is temporary. It is in effect as soon as the mayor signs it. It only lasts for 90 days. We typically mm-hmm. accompany it with a temporary bill that's in effect for 225 days and has to go to Congress for a layover that is just part of our home rule process. But neither are permanent bills. So we're able to act quickly, but it is not in place permanently. Permanent legislation will follow. There will be public hearings. There will be an opportunity for public input. Between the emergency, which we approved on Tuesday, and the temporary, which requires two votes, the second of which will be a month from now, there is the opportunity for the public to comment.
All right, let's go to Councilman Will Jawando of Montgomery County Council. Councilman Jawando, you have you introduced legislation to make racism a health issue, a health crisis. Talk a little bit about that, and because it's not different in the terms of thinking, right? But in terms of legislation with that title, help folks understand when you say it's a health issue and what would legislation do to address it from a health standpoint?
Yes, thank you. And good to be with you and Chair Mendelson. Good to hear you and be with you as well.
Likewise.
You know, we introduced a resolution that I drafted on this week, Tuesday, declaring racism a public health crisis. And because it is, I mean, I've been saying, and I said earlier this week, whether it's the COVID crisis, which is, to use the chair's term, rip the Band-Aid off of health disparities that were already bad. In our county, one in four of the deaths from COVID our black residents, despite that being our population being much lower. If you look at maternal health, similar to national numbers, black women three times more likely to die in childbirth, even if they're highly educated and have health care and access to doctors. You look at certainly police violence. You know, one in 1,000 black men nationally have a chance to be killed by police, so much higher than any other proportion in our society. And so you look at the effects of redlining and where we live and where people of color live in environmentally unstable and communities that don't have sidewalks, so we get hit by cars, buses, and trucks more, and we have higher rates of asthma. So I've been saying we die in many ways. COVID and police violence are certainly the ones that are being highlighted right now, but racism is embedded in all those ways that those poor life outcomes. And so this resolution undisputedly ties racism to those outcomes and says that we have to have a plan in each of those areas to address it, because that was built in the American pie over 401 years, institutional racism. For most of that time, we were either enslaved or we were legally discriminated against by the state. And so you don't just detangle that in one bill or in one year or in one session. So we're going to have to work hard at it. Good thing is we're off to a good start. The landmark racial equity bill last year that will help give us a framework to do that. But this was a resolution saying tying those things together for the public, because most people, I don't think, are just starting to understand the deep embedded systemic racism that we have and that it literally leads to death. And then we have to have an urgent plan of action. It's not something to be nice to do. It's an emergency. So we have plans in all those areas. And first bill under this resolution next week that I'm introducing with all of my colleagues is a police use of force bill that will do some similar things that have been done in D.C. and other parts of the country. It'll ban chokeholds. It'll ban hitting restrained individuals. It will also change the use of force, deadly force standard, which is a significant thing, from reasonable to necessary to prevent life. And we're going to have a fight on our hands on that, but it's an important change. And it'll also create a duty to intervene, which you've been hearing about nationally. When officers, one of the most horrible parts of the George Floyd death, and we've had our own incidences in Montgomery County, is just the officers that stood there and watched for 8 minutes and 46 seconds as he was killed. So now you need to create a duty to intervene for officers who witness officers using excessive force or committing a crime.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our focus tonight is we are talking with legislators in our region, and our focus is on defunding or redirecting funding to police departments. What will that mean? The D.C. Council, again, as we mentioned earlier, has passed emergency legislation with some new restrictions on police. And what will that mean, Chair Mendelson, in terms of monies? Will money be redirected? Is that the plan? Because the highlights that we've seen are, you know, no pepper spray, none of the bean bags, no rubber bullets unless you feel like you're at imminent harm. So we see that. But what about the monies that many of these groups that are out there protesting want to see be redirected in terms of to community programs? Would that may be in the mix for any kind of permanent legislation that may get passed?
The short answer is yes. It was not dealt with on Tuesday because we didn't have the budget before us.
Mm-hmm.
But the budget is pending right now, and that includes the mayor's proposal to increase somewhat the budget for the police department. I expect that the council is going to redirect some of those dollars. For sure, we are going to increase funding related to what we call violence interruption, which is a different approach than the traditional policing. We actually have several programs in place, and I think we're going to increase the funding for those programs substantially. It's an alternative, and clearly there is a recognition that police and traditional law enforcement is not the only way, and sometimes is not the best way to deal with public safety.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our topic tonight is police and the defunding and the redirecting of those funds and the reshifting of police resources. And with that, we should update our audience that the Prince George's County School Board was meeting tonight, a virtual meeting, to decide whether or not they would remove police resource officials out of the schools. In that virtual meeting, the school board has now, just tonight, tabled the plan to remove police from the schools. County Executive Angela Also Brooks was somewhere in the middle on that, saying that she felt that both could be done. So obviously this issue will be readdressed. The Prince George's County School District, the second largest in the state. I believe I have that right. And but again, that plan has been tabled. So I want to go to you, Councilman Jawando. We see what's going on in Prince George's County in terms of trying to decide what to do with police. Should they be in schools? What's your position on that in terms of the county, Montgomery County, and the issues that you might be facing there with the school system?
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, and you are right on Prince George's County. We are the largest in the state, though. I'd like to remind
right.
people.
Right. I thought you were number one, even though I'm a Prince George's County native and school system product. I didn't think it was number one, though. What are we?
Yeah,
are we
two? We're close buddies. We're close
right,
buddies.
Yeah.
But no, we're also examining it. Our school board this week met, and actually today, days are running together, and they passed a resolution calling on just short of taking police out of schools, but to get the information about the arrests, and directed the superintendent to give options if they did want to remove what we call SROs, school resource officers, who are in all 25 of our high schools. We have 167,000 students in our school system, and so we have 25 high schools, and then there are some officers in middle schools. So they passed that resolution today, directing the superintendent to give them a plan if they wanted to do that, and also to review the numbers on arrests and interactions with law enforcement in schools. And so I'm a member of the Education Committee on the council, and we have to fund the budget for the school board and the school system. I am very interested in this issue. I don't think officers need to be in schools or should be in schools. The data is clear. Even if you have a great officer, and many of them are, I've met many of our school resource officers, they would do well in the community, interacting with the community, but it's traumatic for many students. I've heard from many students about interactions. And just by virtue of them being there, you have interactions that do not need to be handled by police officers that they get involved in. And so it's not a good use of resources. And I hope that the school board moves in that direction. I certainly will be looking at that from a budgetary standpoint, which is our purview on the council. We don't need police in schools.
Chairman Mendelson, what is your position on it?
Well, I can only speak for myself at the moment. I think we should look at it. And in fact, today I asked our school chancellor to give us the council data with regard to the officers and how many weapons have been seized and what kind of activities the resource officers have been involved in, like breaking up fights or more serious crimes. I think we need to better understand what these officers do. There are a lot of schools that have said that they want school resource officers, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the correct approach. Now, I'm not taking a position and saying that they're wrong, but it's possible that there are principals who are saying, I need a cop, when in fact maybe a social worker is a better approach. So we're looking at it, and I think that's appropriate.
202-319-7810. I'm sorry, Councilman. 202-319-7810. Your phone calls, questions, and comments are welcome tonight. An important topic. Let's go to the phone lines. And John is calling from West Virginia. Go right ahead, John, with your question or comment.
Yes. Good afternoon and good evening to everyone. My name is John. I'm from the Washington DMV. I graduated from Crossland High School, was a member of the D.C. National Guard. But we're talking about defunding the police department, and I think that that is not the real problem. President Trump took an oath, and he said that he would protect us against all enemies, foreign and domestic. We go over and we fight ISIS. That is a terrorist organization. We don't hear too much about it. Okay, that's good. But what about the biggest terrorist organization in the United States? That's the Ku Klux Klan. That's the Confederacy. That's why the memorials are still there, because the Confederacy is behind the actions of the police department. The Confederacy and all of the Ku Klux Klan, they vote their judges, they vote all of those people in. That's who we need to go out. And that, nobody's ever declared war on that domestic terrorist.
Okay, John, I think we've got it, and you're sort of dropping in and out, so I'm going to just leave it there. But John's point, Jawando, he's sort of, you know, tying the Klan as being the major issue. I don't know if 2020, if the Klan would be the top issue right now facing the nation. Maybe, yeah, if we went back in the 50s and beyond. But I appreciate your comments, John. Jawando, I do want to ask you about Councilman Jawando, rather. You have talked about publicly about believing that you were racially profiled. Talk about your experience with that and how it informs the legislation that you propose while on the council. Not only the legislation that you propose, but your approach to laws, sure, and legislation.
Sure. No, I appreciate that. And I just would, if I could take 10 seconds on the schools issue.
Sure.
The other thing is we have a dramatic nurse shortage. You have to look at it in context. And we're missing nurses. We're missing counselors. You know, we have a horrible ratio, one of the worst in the region of school nurse, health nurses to students. And so when you have those types of deficits and you talk about a budget as a moral document, you really have to look at what is needed in the schools. And I agree with Chair Mendelson, who said we do need intervention. We need people in schools that can help students that are in need or that may be having disagreements and might need restorative justice. But police aren't the way to approach it. So I just wanted to mention that. But okay, on the question you've asked, yeah, about a year ago now, actually, I was pulled over by a state trooper on my way to exercise Saturday morning. It's something I do every morning, well, I used to. Now it's a little different, but on Saturday mornings. And the officer, I was stopped at a stoplight, and he, when the light turned green, I took off, and he pulled me over and said that I had, my front tire had touched the stop line at the light. And so I was, which is a he said it was technically an offense. And so he asked me if it was, the first question he asked me was this my car? And I drive a Lexus. And he said, I was dressed in athletic wear. He said, is it your car? And he said, do you have any outstanding warrants? Those are the first two questions out of his mouth. And I wrote about it and it went viral. And it's an example of the type of, broken windows policing. You stop someone for what you think is a minor offense. I don't think I actually stopped on the line. Then you look for other things and you run them and you take a picture and you run their fingerprints. And it's something that corrodes trust. If you saw the stop and frisk in New York, where, you know, over 90% of the people that they stopped had nothing, no weapons or anything, that they had done wrong. And that is not, good for building trust with police departments who are supposed to protect and serve. So my approach is, let's get away from the stats-driven policing. Let's stop focusing on just arrest and tickets issued. Let's focus on positive outcomes. How many people did you help? What situations did you de-escalate? And if you can find a way to accurately track those things and reward and promote based on that, you'll change the model of policing from a warrior mentality to a guardian mentality. And unfortunately, that's a problem here. It's a problem in many law enforcement agencies because of embedded racism. So I want to see us move against that as we, at the same time, do things like my bill will do next week, have accountability for when police officers act the wrong way. But we need a paradigm shift in how we interact with the public, and that's a problem in many departments.
All right, if you are on the line, we are going to continue this conversation. Kevin, stay right there. When we come back on Sirius XM Channel 141, I'm going to talk to Chairman Mendelson and Councilman Jawando more about defunding the police and departments, and what does that mean, literally, defunding the police departments, and more on body cameras and the controversy around those. So stay where you are. We're going to continue again on Sirius XM Channel 141. The phone lines are still open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, part two of this important conversation. I'm Bramonte Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm with Angela Stribling is next on 96.3 WHUR. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on HRR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight, part two of our conversation on policing. Last night, we talked to officers and callers, but specifically we focused on the police and their perspective about the movements for reform that are pushing throughout the nation. Tonight, we are talking to two legislators and those on the phone lines, two legislators from our region. Phil Mendelson is the chairman of the D.C. Council, and Will Jawando, a council member with the Montgomery County Council. Phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Councilman Mendelson, we know that the district just holds a special place in the nation just by the mere fact that it is not a state, does not have representation in Congress, or at least not voting representation. Yet pays more in taxes than close to a dozen states. And when protests come, especially on the level that we've seen over the last 2 weeks, they will come to the nation's capital because it is the nation's capital. And so with that, when we're talking about defunding police, and that means the police forces all over the country, what does that mean to you? When we hear defunding, help us understand your view of what defunding means.
Well, I think defunding means different things to different people. I think that where we are going to go is that we will look seriously, closely at the increases that the mayor proposed and probably scale those back, and at the same time increase funding for alternatives that are outside the police department, what we call violence interrupters or cure the violence. There's several programs. I know some people think defunding or mean by defunding to actually reduce, eliminate the budget entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's realistic. I mean, we do have a problem with crime. Homicides in the district are about 10% higher than they were a year ago, which is the highest in 10 years for the district. And we need police to be able to do the investigations and to ensure that that the crime is under control. The problem is that police misconduct has created a lot of resentment in the community, legitimately created resentment. When I say legitimately, I mean that the public and citizens have a right to be offended. And finally, it's not just individuals speaking out, but it's whole communities. It's thousands of demonstrators who are speaking out and saying enough of that. In order for the police to do their work, they have to serve, not impose. It's sort of what Will Jawando said a few minutes ago about being guardians, not warriors. And we need to rethink and reorient what our attitude is about policing. And when I say our, I mean the big our. Police departments need to rethink it. The police unions need to rethink it. That policing is about ensuring safety. And that comes with building, not hurting the trust from the community.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, our phone number to get in your questions or your comments. Councilman Jawando, does the term defunding hurt the cause of those who would like to see monies redirected? Because if you're not knee-deep in all of the issues, when we hear defunding, I don't really care what you're talking about, you get a sense of you want to take money out completely. I think that's generally how people think. So would it be wise for those who would like to see systemic changes in terms of at least where monies go to use a different term or to come up with something different?
You know, it's a fair point, and there's been some, you know, talk and writing about this over the last several weeks. I know the Washington Post had an op-ed saying this is what defund police really means, and kind of messaging 101. If you have to explain it and it's not self-explanatory, it's probably not a good message.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are people that feel that way, but I think most people that say that mean we need to rethink what public safety looks like and change the priorities and move some funding, yes, because when you change policy and priorities, funding necessarily has to move with that. And if police aren't responding, you know, for example, to mental health cases, we're going to need to fund those. And they don't want, I know many police would love that help, right, and would not want to have to respond to deal with mental health or homelessness or other things that many of our officers have to spend time doing. So I think there is a need to reframe. And I think, you know, what I say is I think we need to, you know, reframe our vision of public safety, you know, and reframing is probably better than defunding in my view. But look, it, whatever the word is, we need a fundamental new vision, prioritization, and including funding and policy of what public safety is. And that's something that I think is worth organizing for and what you're hearing in the streets right now.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Your question or comments, where do you believe the money should be going? Do you believe in redirecting some of the monies away from the police departments across the nation, and specifically here in our area, Prince George's County, Montgomery County, Washington, D.C., Charles County? Let's go back to the phone lines, and Kevin has been waiting patiently, calling from Clinton. Go right ahead, Kevin, with your question or comment.
Yes, absolutely. Good evening. I just want to say I do believe that the reprioritization of some revenues from just policing to other alternatives to replace the draw on the police officer who is responding to calls from a social economic situation to a criminal situation, and by adding or reprioritizing some resources will allow that. I would also say that maintaining resource officers in the school system where a principal or administration believes that it's warranted is the most critical, most important investment. In light of 18 months ago, the rash of school violence and obviously shootings that occurred. So I would offer that, yes, there should be a reprioritization. We should not stigmatize all police departments because of a few bad apples, but also adding additional tools across the spectrum to enforce or help officers when they receive those calls. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate your comments. Councilman Mendelson, let's talk a little bit about, I want to go back, if I can, just a little bit about the body cameras, and you're well aware, this issue isn't just particular to Washington, D.C., obviously. But there is some concern within the community regarding body cams and the mayor's, you know, position that, you know, wait a minute, we don't know if we just want all of this information going out so quickly without it sort of really being vetted in a way where it could, you know, cause problems once you get into court cases, if we just release all this body cam information. Is that still an issue of consternation within the council and the mayor and trying to figure out really what will work best for all parties involved? Sort of help us understand your sense of where that issue sits right now.
Well, I think there is still some controversy or disagreement within the government about what should happen with the footage. Mm-hmm. I hear it more within the government than outside. The advantage of the body cameras is that it increases exponentially accountability, and it's something that we didn't have in the past. So when there's a dispute, or even when there isn't a dispute, but there's something, an incident that occurs, there's now body camera footage that shows us what happened. And that's, in my view, that's critical for accountability. Now, when we first got body cameras several years ago in the district, there was concern, well, the cameras will pick up a lot of other people, and they shouldn't be, their images shouldn't be released to the public. I just don't think that's played out in reality as being a concern in the last several years. And there also was concern that somehow the victim would be exposed and that that would be compromising in an undesirable way. And again, I don't think that has played out. So we're learning from the last several years about what really happens when this footage is available. I think on balance it's better to be releasing the camera footage because when you don't, then people speculate, well, what was on the footage? What is being hidden? Why is it being hidden? And it's not worth it. It's better to have the accountability. You know, we all need to learn that policing isn't like what you see on TV, and see what really happens. And as I said, the accountability, in my view, is very important.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we're talking about policing and reforms, and we're taking it from the perspective of callers and two of our legislators in our region, Will Jawando, council member with the Montgomery County Council, and Phil Mendelson, chairman of the D.C. Council. Let's go back to the phone lines. Judith calling from the district. Go right ahead, Judith, with your question or comment.
Well, thank you very much. I joined the civil rights movement when I was 13 years old after seeing a picket line at a bank in Upper Manhattan, Bronx folks picketing redlining. Redlining in housing still goes on today. So I make that conversation to tell you that the gentleman from West Virginia was very right. Systemic racism means that the people who were on the White Citizens Council and the Ku Klux Klan moved into the system. They moved into the alderships, the city councils, the redevelopment land agencies, the police departments, and they carried out their same hatred and their same discrimination. And the reason why we have a blue code in the police force and why I, as a union leader and organizer and elected union official, say we have to not only reform the police, but we also have to support them, is because you have that attitude ingrained in the system. So you have to make sure that there's the proper scrutiny of the internal affairs department to the police department. You have to make sure that the person who wants to tell something that they feel is awry or against their oath of office, the whistleblower, is protected and is able to come forward without having to worry about the next time they go out on patrol with somebody, is somebody going to take their spare gun out their sock, shoot them, and then put it in the suspect's hand and say the suspect shot them. I come from New York City. Before there was a Serpico movie with Al Pacino, there was a real Serpico, and he had to keep his head on a swivel. So don't think that that's from 1950s and 1960s. That's the problem today. And until we start putting in the police department less militarization and more interaction with the social workers and community people who can help them have relationship with the community, we're going to continue to have the same problem.
Thank you so much, Judith. We appreciate your comments there. She talked about Serpico. I do remember that movie, and I do believe that was from the 60s, even though it aired in the 70s. But thank you, Judith. She gave us a pretty good, Councilman Jawando, sort of a history lesson sort of on the system, and at least how she believes it works in holding those accountable. Before we go to break, I'll let you sort of address that. Is that a difficult thing in terms of holding police departments accountable, and how best to do that?
It is, and that was, I was going to say amen if I didn't want to interrupt her, though. I mean, she gave a whole lesson there. You know, you think about the history of the police force, you know, not to rehash it, but, you know, started to capture escaped slaves in the South and break up unions in the North, and then used in Jim Crow era to, quote-unquote, keep black people in line. You know, many legislators would say that, right, in the Reconstruction period and after. And so that's the history, and that doesn't just go away. But certainly it's hard. Accountability is a huge issue. The police unions are very strong, and the wide breadth and the way that militarization has come into departments, and the way that even at the federal level, I used to work on Capitol Hill and in the White House, the Byrne JAG grants, the justice grants, they gave you more money if you had more arrests. And so you look at the war on drugs. And so all that whole complex built up. You look at Bill Clinton building, you know, I'm going to put a 100,000 new cops on, and then they put even more on the street. And so there's been a complex, almost similar to the military, that's been built up. And you add on to that history and legacy of racism and discrimination, and you get a very difficult system to change. And accountability, because our officers have such a tough job, people are reticent to criticize or to say that we need to change things. But we're at a point now, you're seeing it, where we have to, because people will not stand for it anymore.
More on this conversation on police reform, redirecting monies away from the police department into other parts of the community, how to do that, how much money should be redirected. Your questions or comments, we want them. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. And we have two legislators here who can address those who know the ins and out of legislation and where money goes, how it's spent, and how it should be allocated. We'll be right back. We're going to take a quick timeout. This is the Insight segment on Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight is part two of our two-night conversation on policing and the reforms that are being proposed across the nation in cities and towns and states, all here in America, and all stemming from the tragic death of George Floyd at the hands of a Minneapolis police officer. The phone lines are still open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. And let's go back to those phone lines. George is on the line calling with a question or comment. Go right ahead, George.
Hi. Yes. Thank you for taking my call, sir. Yes. My contribution towards this discussion is something I consider very fundamental as far as and this is in the area of police training. I think that we, if reform has to start, it has to start from the training school. First of all, who are these trainers? Because in my own feeling and thinking, I believe they are the one giving so much power to these police to go out to the street. You know, whatever it is they promise them, you're covered by the law, or the, you know, go there, do whatever you want to do, nothing going to happen to you. So in my honest contribution towards this, we should start the reform from the school, from the academy. Know who these trainers are. What kind of people are they? What kind of training are they? What kind of training are they giving to these police officers that make them, when they come out to the street, you know, they do things that are outrageous?
Right. So I think, thank you so much, George, for your call. So George is saying more needs to be done during the training process. We had two officers on yesterday talking about that and what they are told and how they're trained, and that they're given a lot of the training that they should have in terms of dealing with the public. But whether or not a particular officer wants to use that proper training ends up being the issue. Chairman Mendelson, I want to go back a little bit to the emergency legislation, and I think a couple of interesting things that are in the legislation. It aims to leave the union, police union, right, out of police disciplinary process. Why is that, and why is that part of the legislation, and why did the council feel that that was important to put in there?
Well, actually, it was an amendment that I put in, and I think it's very important because right now, the chief said to me on Monday that under our current disciplinary process, which is one that's been bargained, that if what happened in Minneapolis was to happen here, he would not be able to move quickly to fire the police officers. He'd have to go through this very protracted disciplinary process. And there are times when there are incidents that are so egregious that there has to be swifter and more dramatic action. Our disciplinary process is one that's been bargained, and what we are seeing across the country is a realization that the police are not always the best folks at policing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a lot of respect for police officers. I don't mean anything wrong by any of this, but the fact is that sometimes one should not be the one who's policing himself. And so the amendment that I moved was one that says that the disciplinary matters are no longer a rightful subject for collective bargaining. Now, I'm a strong supporter of unions, but I think here we have to make an exception that disciplinary matters, when it comes to public safety, when it comes to the police power, when it comes to the ability to deny liberty, when it comes to the ability to use force and fatal force, that there has to be a different kind of a disciplinary process. If we leave it to the same old approach, which is that the unions bargain it, we will get what we are getting now, which is we see across the country where police unions are resisting a lot of the demands for changes that will eradicate the misconduct that we are seeing is so prevalent. I wanted to say something about training because the caller made an important point. Training is important. And one of the things we put in our emergency legislation the other day is to expand training requirements to include specifically bias policing, white training with regard to white supremacy, racism, the prohibition on neck restraints, limitations on use of force, de-escalation tactics, and a duty to report misconduct. I think all that's important, and you get that through training and retraining.
And speaking of unions, we saw very prominently the police chief in Minneapolis, obviously the Minneapolis, the epicenter right now of protests, because, again, that's where George Floyd lost his life. He came out and said he was going to end, at least for the time being, negotiations with the union because the union really would not budge or would not move enough on types of reforms and were very resistant to that. Councilman Jawando, has that been the experience with the council or with the police union in Montgomery County? Has that been an issue at all, or has the relationship been pretty much a sense of give and take? What's been your sense of that?
No, you know, it's been a rocky road, I think. I fought hard. I wanted to increase the pay for our, recruits. Mm-hmm. So that we had higher pay for people coming in. You want high quality people that have high standards. You need to pay for that. And I fought for that, even in the midst of this pandemic. So on that side of the labor, I think there is some, I tend to have some agreement, but on the accountability side, on the transparency side, those have been problems. It's so important if you're going to have the public who, again, vests power in the police, allocates it, just like they elect us, they give their power to the police to protect them, the power to take lives, the power to detain and deprive liberty. And that's a serious power, and it needs to be checked with transparency and accountability on how it's used. And so we need to know when things have happened quickly. We need to have mechanisms to hold people accountable quickly and not have drawn out months, years long process. You can get due process, but you can do it in a way that's manageable. And I do think that has been a problem for us, and it's been a problem for unions and police across the country. I did want to say one thing about the type of training. It's very important that when you hire someone, if you're going to have a guardian and not a warrior, what you train and what you say the job is and how you're dressed and what kind of equipment you use and your role as a police officer is to assist and to de-escalate and to help people and not just get arrests and tickets. That framework has to be changed. And right now, that's not what's being trained. And that needs to be a fundamental shift as well. So this caller, I couldn't agree more with his comments on that.
And speaking of callers, we've got a few moments left, so we're going to try to squeeze in one last call if we can. Everton calling from D.C. Hi, Everton. The clock is ticking, so I want you to get your point in and get it in quick if you can.
Yes, sir. Sorry about that. My point is about the police in school. Mm-hmm. And, I disagree for them to be in school. The police are supposed to be, yes, peacemakers. We can put them in the community and be with the community. And so we can form groups like youth clubs that police mingle with the youth so he knows who is a bad one and who is a good one. He can mentor the bad ones. I'm from Jamaica. And trust me, in Jamaica, yes, we have crimes, yes. But we have police youth clubs. And like how you have districts there, We can have district and entertainment like sports or what have you, competition against them. Mm-hmm. So you all get to know the community, and that's my view right now. I have more to say, but the time is going.
But the clock is ticking. But I think we got your point, Everton, and we appreciate that. Before we run out of time, Chairman Mendelson and Councilmember Jawando, I want to give you at least about 30 seconds for any closing thoughts that you may have before that music starts playing. Chair Mendelson?
To me, it's really profound that the chief in Minneapolis said that the union there doesn't get it. And if you have been following the event in Buffalo where the riot squad resigned when the officers were suspended, mm-hmm. they don't get it. The police are supposed to be servants, they're supposed to be guardians, they're supposed to work with the community, they're part of the community. At least that's the way it's supposed to be. And one part of what we're struggling here is with police forces across the country that don't get it and how we change that.
And Councilmember Jawando, about 30 seconds, your closing thoughts.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. I just, again, want to reemphasize, we must reframe public safety with law enforcement that is from their community, understands the folks that they, and respects the people that they're serving, and that doesn't focus on stats-driven policing, focuses on de-escalation, on helping people out on community-based events. If we do that and then we invest in mental health and other things that can take stuff off of the police force, we're going to be in a much better place. But we have to reframe the conversation.
Will Jawando, council member with the Montgomery County Council and council chairman of the D.C. Council, Phil Mendelson, our guest tonight. Thank you so much, both of you, for your insight, your expertise, and your patience and taking all the calls and all the questions. We always appreciate it.
Yeah. Good to see you. Thanks, Phil.
Likewise.
And thanks to all our callers tonight. That's the Daily Drum for this Thursday, June 11th. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night.